Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to our friends at Gulfstream Park for their sponsorship of this and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB during the championship meet. We appreciate their support. Speaking of Gulfstream, their sister track yesterday had a big day up at Laurel. We'll talk about that. Bottom of the hour, we're going to be joined by Steve Bick. He's been down in New Orleans all week, and he was at the fairgrounds yesterday. We'll get his take on some of that nice fairgrounds action, including the Risen Star and more. That'll be a little bit later on. Do want to alert you that, speaking of sister track to not only Gulfstream and Laurel, but Santa Anita out in Southern California, they have a mandatory pay this afternoon in their Rainbow Six, $592,000 in the carryover with a mandatory pay. That will balloon up significantly. So if you're a player of the Rainbow, take a look at Santa Anita today with the mandatory. But as I alluded to, we'll start out with some discussion yesterday. That Laurel winter season is always a lot of fun. Every couple, 2-3 weeks, there's a nice big stakes Saturday, and yesterday was one of the best of those with the General George, the Barbara Fritchie, the Campbell, and more. And who better to reach out to talk some Maryland racing than our friend Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. They do a great job covering racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Frank, good morning.
Mr. Merrow, good to see you. Happy Sunday.
Absolutely. Happy Sunday after a big Saturday. And we had Dave Rodman on yesterday, and he kind of previewed the card, and he mentioned on the big day they were going to feature ice sculptures, and I checked your Twitter feed. We went back and forth about it a little bit with text messages, pulled up a shot of the winner, and I have to ask, I'm thinking when Dave says it, oh, there's going to be ice horses and whatnot, I think this is an ice Tyrannosaurus Rex, if I'm not mistaken, gets the first place. So I'm guessing there was not a horse racing theme, despite the fact that it was at a racetrack.
I got to say, I walked in and I saw it. An ice sculpture. Let me go see what it is. And I walked over and I said, what the heck is this thing? apparently not a... not a horse racing theme. As you said, I think in the text to me, maybe the judges were 9 years old. I just don't know what to do with that at all.
Everybody loves dinosaurs, but even that 9 to 11 range, I'm thinking they may have been on the judging panel for the Tyrannosaurus Rex. What were the other ice sculptures like?
You know what? I only saw one other one. There was a big one outside, and now I can't even remember what it was. It was not as memorable as a dinosaur, I can tell you that. The dinosaur had to win.
The Tyrannosaurus Rex, the king of the dinosaurs. So hats off to Laurel yesterday for adding to the fun day. All right, let's jump right in because there was a big stakes day yesterday, and we'll kind of work our way back from the General George. And you and I were talking before we went on the air. The General George, we're going to watch the stretch run. It is going to be the fabulous Cord Maker. I mean, obviously, we talked about this yesterday with Dave Rodman. 7 years old, kind of a win machine. 13 wins coming into yesterday overall. 10 of those at Laurel. Over $800,000 in the bank. And Cord Maker proves to be best yesterday as the two horse. But we'll watch him come down the stretch. War Toxin at 48-1, the one horse. Cord Maker comes out, and I said to you, when I looked at this, and talking about it on the show yesterday, the afternoon show, I said, boy, if you had War Toxin at 48-1, I feel for you, because Cord Maker does come out, but you can see he's clear here. I said, I think Cord Maker was clearly the best horse. It wouldn't have been crazy to me, however, if the stewards had reversed it, but I was kind of glad they left it where I was tilting a little more in that direction, because as I say, I think Cord Maker was best. And just continues to be phenomenal down there on the Maryland circuit. So Cord Maker does get it done and survives the inquiry objection as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I thought you leave the horse up in that spot. I thought he was best. And I think one of the things, too, is you had to make allowances. It was really windy at Laurel yesterday.
And that's a great point.
If you watch the racing, you saw horses getting blown all over the place in the stretch of different races. And so a horse coming out a little bit on another horse, I mean, you'd have taken just about everybody down if that was what, if that was going to be the standard yesterday. So I think you had to make that allowance a little bit. And you know what? Every part of the Cord Maker story is cool. You know, he's been with trainer Rodney Jenkins for his whole career, owner Hillwood Stables. He's had Victor Carrasco on his back almost his whole career, all but a few races. And this horse is, I think he's better now than he's ever been. He's 7 years old. They've really got him figured out. He's in tremendous form. A couple of races ago, he had the highest buyer figure of his career. He got a 102, which was his career best. And now he's won his first graded stake at seven. I mean, these are the horses you love to root for. And it was cool to be there yesterday because there was a nice crowd out, which we haven't had a lot of in Maryland since the pandemic. So that was nice. And people were all gathered around the winner's circle, clapping and cheering when he came back. And it really, you know, it was nice to see the house horse get the money in the big race.
Yeah, I saw the winner's circle interview afterwards, and clearly they were very happy to get the first graded stakes win to survive the inquiry. So that was nice as well. And you and I were talking before we went on the air. Uriah St. Louis runs second. And he ran a close second earlier on the card. They said, well, he wasn't going to win with that one earlier on the card. He can't win at 6-1. He's got to have a long shot. It was 3 or 4 years ago. He won the Jockey Club in New York at 48 or 49-1 with Discreet Lover, and almost does it here with War Toxin at 48-1. When you look up at the board and there's your Uriah St. Louis horse at, you know, 45, 50-1, hey, take an extra look.
I guess that's right. You know, he really does do that. And I looked at this race because I, as a betting matter, I wanted to take a stand against Cord Maker. I feel like 7/8 isn't really his best distance. I feel like he's more of a two-turn horse. But I couldn't get to War Toxin. I could have looked at that race for the rest of my life, and I couldn't get to War Toxin. And actually, the funny thing is, you mentioned his other horse, Forewarned, who ran second in the Campbell. I loved Forewarned in that spot. So, you're right. If your eye St. Louis is 50-1, put a couple bucks on him and hope for the best.
Absolutely. All right, let's go race earlier, the Barbara Fritchie. Charlton Baker ships down from New York. I had Dave Rodman on yesterday. I laughed when we looked at this race in the afternoon and the result, because Dave said, you know, I looked up how often Charlie Baker comes down to Laurel, and I think it was the past 5 years. It may have been a little less than that, but it was years. He had shipped one horse down, and he won the Primonetta a few years ago. And so when another one. Put this in your back pocket. When Charlie Baker ships to Laurel, take an extra look. Glass Ceiling yesterday. Dylan Davis came down for the ride, and Glass Ceiling is going to be the number two horse here. Jakarta, who I know a lot of people liked, will run second. And Feed the Esprit runs third in here. But at 4-5, Glass Ceiling got it done. Looked pretty good doing it. The chart margin's a half a length. It was a nice little duel here. But as I say, Charlie Baker successful coming down from New York. And I saw him in the winner's circle. Came down with the horse, so that was nice too.
Yeah. Talked with Charlie afterwards. Also talked with Dylan Davis. I mean, I think one of your hints about how this horse was doing was that Dylan Davis gave up a day at Aqueduct to come down to Laurel yesterday. And this clearly was the horse he was coming for, although he had a couple other mounts as well. And, you know, it really looked like she was going to go right on by and win pretty easy, you know, at the head of the lane. And Jakarta really fought it out to the finish. A really good effort from Jakarta, I thought. And I thought Feed Esprit also ran really well. You know, a race ago, she got left at the gate and was about as far behind as you could be and made a nice middle move and then flattened out. So you kind of felt like if she could get out of the gate okay, she could run pretty well in the spot. And she did. But clearly, Glass Ceiling was the horse coming into this race and coming out.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Feed Esprit, the one horse. At about the eighth ball, I thought she was going to go by both of them. And I'm not sure it was so much her as the other two just showed some real heart to hold on. Because then I thought, well, she's at least going to get by Jakarta, but couldn't get by that one either. And Glass Ceiling kept on going. So that was a nice. You always like to see a nice gutsy performance from a horse as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to Charlie Baker for his training job with this one. I mean, this horse for 20 races of her career was... She was like the definition of just a horse, as they say in the racing game. You know, she was okay. She tried okay, but she was nothing special. She was, when they claimed her for $40,000, she still had the A other than the first level allowance condition available to her. And he told me afterwards that that's kind of what they thought. They said, well, we're going to claim this horse and we'll win the A other than, and that'll make it worth it. And he said they've gotten her to relax. She's really matured over the last several months. And she's a different horse now. The only horse that's beaten her in her last five starts is Lady Rocket, who then turned around and won the Go for One by a pole. So this horse really moved in the right direction, and I think a lot of credit to Charlie Baker for that.
Yeah, and again, just, you know, to be an astute horseman, look in the condition book and say, hey, we're going down, and they pick up a graded stakes win as well. Charlie, a part owner also, so a nice afternoon. Yep. For that group there. All right, a little bit earlier, the aforementioned John Campbell, $100,000 up for grabs, 8.5 furlongs the trip, and we've already mentioned Four Warren for Uriah St. Louis. At 6-1 just wasn't the right price, but man, if you had that one and they come under the wire, again, I feel for you because this was a ding-dong battle. Galerio, the number 4 horse, is going to get it done here, but the chart margin is just a nose. 3-1 over 6-1. Working on a Dream, the 6-5 favorite, is going to wind up 6th in the field of 7 here. But Galerio, again, this is a nice gutsy performance. Forewarn is coming. As they come under the wire, it is a photo finish, but Galerio holds on by a nose.
Yeah, Galerio, you know, he's a horse that got good maybe, I can't remember now, probably 2 years ago, and has been in 8 stakes prior to this one, not won any of them, but been second or third in 6. So he had been knocking on the door, finally gets it done yesterday. It was the second stakes win of the day for the trainer-owner-jockey combination of John Salzman Jr., Bird Moberly, and the jockeys J.D. Acosta. And a little neat aside on this, I looked this up. Now, Bird Moberly, who's the owner, she is the daughter of two now deceased trainers, Jack Moberly and Gretchen Moberly. She's been in the game her whole life. Jack Moberly, when he was a trainer, he won the Campbell 32 years ago when it was still a grade 3. Like, the Campbell is one of those races that kind of used to be a big deal and really isn't anymore. But old-time horsemen kind of remember it as a big deal. So Jack Moberly wins the race 32 years ago as a grade 3. Bird comes and gets it now today or yesterday as an owner. So I thought that was kind of a cool closing of the circle, if you will.
Yeah. It all comes around. Very nice. And as again, nice performance. Another one of those horses down in the Mid-Atlantic you'd love to own, Galerio, now 6 years old. And with yesterday's win, has to be past $500,000 in earnings. So nice performance there. And as they say, one of those you would like to have in your barn. This one, I will alert people before we pick it up, and I'm assuming we'll pick it up on the turn. Take a look at the 2 horse who is in behind other horses here. The number 2 is Kiss the Girl, the second choice at 2-1. But look at Victor Carrasco. Whoa, I'm putting the brakes on here. He completely kind of leans back, pulls the reins back. But as they turn into the stretch and things open up and Kiss the Girl sees the opening, just shoots right through, gets it done by a chart margin of over a length. Artful Splatter second, Miss Leslie third. But boy, this was a nice performance where, as I say, Victor Carrasco really had to put on the brakes just as they turned into the stretch. But when she saw the daylight, she opened it up. So nice performance in the Nellie Morse from Kiss the Girl.
Yeah, it really was a good effort from her, you know, a pretty impressive one. Nobody's been hotter around Laurel in the last few weeks than Victor Carrasco. He's been winning on everything, including Cordmaker later in the card. So not really a surprise that he gets it done with Kiss the Girl. Got to give a little love to Artful Splatter there. She continues to run good races. She's working on kind of a lengthy losing streak, but she, you know, a lot of times when that happens with horses, they kind of go off form, they get a little bit sour. She continues to run really good races and did again yesterday, but this horse just kind of spurted through the hole there, and once she got clear, she was gone.
Yeah, it looked very good getting it done in there. 8 wins now and 23 career starts, and as you say, Victor Carrasco's having a good meet. Trained by Mike Trombetta, he's having a pretty good meet as well down there. All right, always on these days, like to take a look at the 3-year-old races. We'll look at the 3-year-old boys and the 3-year-old girls. We'll see how these play out going into the season. You know, maybe not Derby, but maybe there's some Preakness hopes for these kind of horses, or the Miss Preakness or whatnot. On the 3-year-old boys' side of things, we're going to take a look at the Miracle Wood. a mile for $100,000. And it is going to be the number 8, Locomotive, getting it done. Majestic Frontier, the number 5, second. Number 6, Hefner, third. There were co-favorites in here, Perfect Day and Conclusive. They wind up running 4th and 6th, disappointing a little bit. But Locomotive gets it done, having run a number of races, obviously, in the Mid-Atlantic already, and being a stakes winner, won the Lewis earlier in the career, but gets it done again on Saturday. Start number 9, win number 4 for Locomotive.
Yeah, this was the other Salzman Moberly Acosta horse. And, you know, he's a nice horse. They're having a lot of fun with this horse. He's won a couple. I guess he's won 3 stakes now. He won the Hickory Tree on the turf at Colonial, and then he won the James F. Lewis, and now he wins this race. You know, he doesn't project as a horse who's going to go on to bigger things. He doesn't project to be a Preakness horse. He's not Triple Crown nominated. And, you know, he wins some of these races. He loses some of these races. So he's not going to be a big star, I don't think. But they're having a lot of fun, and they should continue to have a lot of fun with him. They're going to try him most likely next out. The next step from here, from the Miracle Wood, it goes to the private turns, then the Tessio, then the Preakness, if you're good enough to do all that. So they're planning to take him to the private terms next out, is my understanding. And we'll see, you know, the water is going to get a little bit deeper as you go forward. And so we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, I talked to Bird Moberly after this race, and I said, well, what are you planning? And she said, you know what, we're just enjoying this right now. This is just so much fun, and this horse has been so cool for us. So we're just going to enjoy this moment and take it from there. And I think that's probably the right attitude. One horse, Majestic Frontier, the runner-up here, this is a fairly remarkable story. This is a horse that 4 starts ago was 2nd in Maiden 10,000, which is the bottom maiden level at Laurel, then won a Maiden 16 and was only in that race because they couldn't get a Maiden 10 to go. Then won so easy, trainer Jerry Robb said, well, let's try him in an allowance. And he won that, and now he's 2nd in the stakes. So in a very short period of time, this horse has gone from not able to win at the very bottom to 2nd in a stake, which is quite a rapid development.
Yeah, and I'm just looking and going by the 2 wins coming into this and won $52,000. And you assume the purse yet. We're up at, you know, since that 2nd in the maiden has put about $70,000 in the bank. That's a pretty good performance.
Yeah, no, it's been amazing. You know, I talked to Jerry Robb after the horse won the allowance, and I said, you know, kind of where'd that come from? And he said, I didn't know the horse was this good. So, you know, he's catching everybody a little bit off guard. I talked to his assistant trainer last night on the way out of the track, and she said they're just thrilled, you know. That
gotta be.
When you get a horse like that who turns into this, you're just thrilled, you know. Stakes placing looks pretty good from that perspective.
Yeah, and it also goes to show from a handicapping perspective. I talk a lot about it. Sometimes horses just take a while to kind of figure it out. Once they figure it out, they're on their way, and that may be the case with Majestic Frontier. All right, want to go back to also the Wide Country for the 3-year-old girls, and before we went on the air, you made a point of saying, geez, let's really take a look at this one, because this was a performance worth paying attention to, and I completely agree. Again, the 3-year-old fillies going 7 furlongs for $100,000, and we'll look at the number 1, Lunabelle, at 2-5, winning very easily, coming from the back of the pack early to win off by 3 lengths. She is Whiskey runs 2nd, Sandy's Garden runs 3rd, but Lunabelle for Ham Smith gets it done yesterday in the Wide Country. Talk about this victory.
So I said this to you before we went on the air, you know, I think this horse is a star. This is a real racehorse right here. Yeah, she wins easy, and you see the stretch run, and, you know, she's supposed to win easy. She's 2-5. But if you watch that whole race, she's in trouble, just about from the moment the gate opens to the 3/8 pole. You know, she just has, she breaks a little slow, kind of rushes up, steadies back to last, in tight rounding the turn. Finally, Dennis Araujo, the jockey, just kind of kicks her out wide and says, run, and she ends up winning in hand by 3 lengths. You know, she had, at the 3/8 pole, she had no business winning this race, and she basically won it for fun. And both Dennis and Hammy Smith, the trainer, thinks she's a horse that will go farther. She runs like a horse that'll go farther. She gives you the speed when you ask for the speed. He didn't say this, and he might just skip the kind of next leg, which is the Beyond the Wire. But I think you've got to be thinking about the Black Eyed Susan for this horse. I mean, she looks like a star to me.
She definitely looked very good yesterday. Going to be interested to see what the numbers come out. I'm a buyer's guy, but I will say, I'm not quite sure yesterday how much to buy into the numbers one way or the other, because you've mentioned it, but Dave Rodman mentioned it a bunch yesterday. Coming down the backstretch, he was talking about, oh, they've got the tailwind moving them along. And so with the wind yesterday, right, that may affect the overall numbers as well.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, if you saw the flags, they were, you know, straight out, you know, pointing down the backstretch. So those horses, they should have been going fast early and kind of struggling late, and I think you probably saw that. So you're certainly going to have to consider that in your handicapping going forward, whatever the numbers come back like. But this horse, you know, the other thing with Lunabelle is now she's done this three times in a row. You know, so you do it once and you say, well, you know, that was impressive. Let's see what comes next. She's done it three times in a row. So she's clearly asserted herself as the best sophomore filly on the grounds, which doesn't necessarily get you anywhere, but she's doing it the way a good horse should do it. And so that's the thing that's what you got to keep an eye on going forward, I think.
Yeah, and again, a nice performance amongst a number of nice performances yesterday, and a really great card down at Laurel, and you noted a nice crowd down. That's great to hear that maybe people are getting kind of back into the swing of things after a couple of years on the sidelines. And what was the weather like overall, besides the wind? What were the temperatures?
It was cold. So this weekend, somehow, no matter what is predicted, it's cold. It's always cold. You know, they might say it's going to be 60, but it's going to be cold. You can pretty much take that to the bank. And so yesterday, you know, like early in the week, it'll be 50. And okay, that'll be all right. But I think it was more like 40 and going down and windy. It was really windy. So it ended up being pretty cold. But you know what? Still a nice crowd out, as we discussed, including people on the track apron. There are even people in the grandstand, and there are almost never people in the grandstand. You know, people stay down on the first level in the simulcast areas, or they go outside. They don't usually go upstairs to the grandstand. There were people in the grandstand yesterday. So it felt a little bit like old times, and it was nice to see.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And not only some great horse racing, but a great T-Rex as well in the ice sculpture contest. So thumbs up again to a great day down at Laurel. And you can keep up with all of that news and all of the Mid-Atlantic news as well by checking out theracingbiz.com. Frank, as always, appreciate the visit. We'll talk again.
My pleasure's mine, Seth. Thanks for having me on. Have a great day.
Absolutely. Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. We'll take a break. I have a couple of stakes races to take a quick look at that were outside of Laurel and or Fairgrounds. And so we'll come back. We'll have a short segment and just take a quick look at some of the other stakes action. And then towards the bottom of the hour, Steve Beck from the Fairgrounds. He was there all week and was there obviously yesterday taking a look at the stakes action down in New Orleans. So we'll catch up with him in a few. Stay tuned. Be back in a moment.
Find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As noted before the break, big days yesterday, stakes-wise at Laurel and at Fairgrounds, but there were other stakes, as there normally are, on a Saturday around the country. Before I get into that, I want to keep reminding you, today there is the mandatory payout at Santa Anita in the Rainbow with almost $600,000 in the pool. That will balloon up significantly. So if you're a Rainbow player, jump in out at Santa Anita, take a look, and play the mandatory pay in the Rainbow today out in Southern California. All right, amongst the other stakes action yesterday, the Holly Hughes at Aqueduct. No surprises here. I mean, the big favorite was What Do You Think? The challenger was My Boy Tate. They're on best efforts, they were probably pretty close. I tilted towards What Do You Think Now on top. Coming around the turn, What Do You Think Now was getting challenged, though, by Running With Scissors, the number six horse, and eventually puts that one away. I was a little scared because in the paddock before the race, Maggie had kind of given a thumbs up to Running With Scissors, and she does such a great job. As they dueled around the turn, I thought, oh, is Running With Scissors going to get the best? But no, once they turned into the stretch, you can see What Do You Think Now separates. It's a late run by My Boy Tate, but no threat. So they were the two players in here, 3-5 and what, 7-5, 3-5, 3-2, something like that. So you wound up with a ginormous $4 exact with the two logicals in the five horse field. But again, it just kind of played out the way was expected. Rudy Rodriguez, Trevor McCarthy, the team for the winner there. What Do You Think Now in the Holly Hughes. Over at Gulfstream, the Gulfstream Park Sprint was very interesting because it was the four-year-old debut for Drain the Clock. I put Drain the Clock on top. I didn't think he was invincible. He was going off at 3-5. Only had one start since running fourth in the Alan Jerkins up at Saratoga, and that was on December 10th. It was an optional claimer and won that. But what jumped out at me were the two bullet works coming into this. Drain the Clock is the number six horse. Was in the scrum early, was getting challenged early, and gets run down late here by Miles Ahead, who was another player. I mean, you could have played that one. I used Drain the Clock, but you can see Miles Ahead is 3-1 as the second choice or the co-second choice. Second choice. Diamond Oops was another interesting player in there. That one winds up running third. But Drain the Clock ran second. As I say, he got challenged a little bit. Only the second start in the last, 8 months or so. So Drain the Clock, I think, that as the four-year-old debut, still going to be an interesting player in the sprint division amongst the older horses. So Drain the Clock second. But as I say, I think going forward, he'll benefit from that one. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will be joined by Steve Bick. And again, he was down in New Orleans all week long. Most importantly, yesterday at the fairgrounds, taking a look at some of the great stakes action down there. So we'll go over the stakes at the fairgrounds yesterday right after this break. Stay tuned.
I'm Seth Merrill, and as serious horse players, we know that information is critical when placing a bet. With live streaming of more than 30 tracks, race replays, free past performances, and daily picks from professional handicappers, no one gives you more up-to-the-minute information than Capital OTB. Combine that with the best player awards in New York State, and you have everything a serious horse player needs to be successful.
Win more with Capital OTB.
Winning starts here.
The Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off Exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTB.com.
Welcome back. As promised before the break, down in New Orleans all week long, including yesterday on the big day down at the fairgrounds, our friend Steve Bick of Sirius and XM's At the Races and More. Of course, summertime sits in also up at Saratoga on the Sunday mornings, co-hosting. And Steve, good morning.
Good morning. I'm over here looking over here. Good morning, Seth. Good morning, everybody.
Happy to have you on board. And as they say, you've been down there all week long, and I've been following your Twitter. And so to kick things off, I just wanted, A, you taught me a new word. I was not familiar with gustatory, which has to do with food and the sense of taste. I'm familiar with gastronomy, which is kind of the study of food or that type of a thing. I knew that one. I did not know gustatory, though. But you tweeted out, the crawfish bake boil looked very good. I'm not a Spumoni guy, but I think at the ice cream place I could have found a flavor I liked. But I will say, my brother-in-law grew up in New Orleans, and my sister and he lived there for a while, so I'm familiar with king cake. I am not a huge fan of the king cake, but give us your weekend food down in New Orleans.
Well, the weekend food is always a highlight down here. I see the king cake on the screen, and the king cake is like it's like a religion now down here. It's gotten actually bigger even than it ever was, and it's a celebratory cake for Mardi Gras. Of course the three colors of Mardi Gras in New Orleans, the purple, gold, and green, and it can be filled with all kinds of fillings. Typically, it's a sweet dough, a Danish dough, but everybody's got their own take on it. So a cinnamon swirl is very common. Cream cheese filling. The one that was pictured there, I found a Honduran bakery market called Norma's, not far from the racetrack, that does a guava jelly, like a guava filling with cream cheese, that was out of this world. That's got its own following. I've been a fan of the standard ones as well. Ben Bacek, Mike Bacek's brother, has been sending Tina and I a king cake every Mardi Gras for years. So king cake, bigger than ever. There is, of course, the baby. For those that are further unfamiliar, they take a little plastic figurine baby, and it's hidden in the cake. It's right in the dough. And so when people cut it up and everybody celebrates Mardi Gras with their king cake, whoever gets the baby, I'm not exactly sure what you get. I think it's like a year of good luck, I guess, by virtue of having found the baby. So king cake, always fun. The food has been, it's been a spectacular week. Starting Monday, I got here last Sunday, a week ago, and Monday, as it happened at the track, Grant Forster was having a crawfish boil. And so I got invited there, and Grant, who also has a very famous derby party. Grant Forster has a small house right across the street from Churchill. And all derby week now, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, there's a ongoing party at that house, and it's legendary. In fact, it even got written up in the New York Times last year. But Grant will also have these occasional crawfish boils. I had never been to one. And it's quite something. There's the live crawfish, and they put it into a big boil vat filled with a lot of spices, lemon, vegetables. They'll throw all kinds of vegetables in, sausage, andouille sausage or boudin, the blood sausage, and they boil them very briefly, but then they sit in the steamer for about a half an hour to really absorb the flavor, and then they pour them. I don't know if you got, if Brian's got the picture of the table with the with all the crawfish laid out on the table, but then you just stand around and you snap them off, and you pull out the little, you know, the little tail. Essentially, it's like a little miniature, it's like a langostino, about the size of a langostino. This is early in crawfish season. Crawfish season goes from about Christmas, it starts, and then it ends around Derby time in early May. And the weather is a very big factor, is how warm it gets, because it needs to be warm for the crawfish to get active, and for them to grow and get to be a good size. Right now, they're kind of small. But there was also shrimp. They also do shrimp. They throw corn in there and little red potatoes. And so it's, you know, it's a lot like a New England clam bake, only it's the region, you know, the region specialty, the crawfish. So it was a lot of fun, and it's a real social gathering. And that's the driving force down here in general. I mean, everything here involves friends and family. It's very unique, and the fairgrounds itself, the atmosphere there, particularly yesterday, where the racing was spectacular. It's just, I mean, Saratoga, probably we've got the closest thing to it. But there's groups of friends, you know, that have been coming to the track for years, and then go out for dinner. You know, I got taken out by the McGooeys, Frank and Patrick McGooey. You know, Patrick has won the BCBC twice. Frank is one of the top handicapper horse players anywhere in the country as well. It took me to Mosca's on Thursday night. Big group of us, 8 of us. Unbelievably fun. Mosca's a famous gangster roadhouse about 15 minutes outside of downtown New Orleans. Family style Italian, really fun. Loyza's by the track, a big racetrack hangout after training hours. Everybody eats. The food is fabulous. Gumbo and po' boys and barbecue shrimp. Everything revolves around the social aspect of racing here, and it can't be beat. I mean, this is one of the great venues and racing towns historically, and racing states. I mean, Louisiana, you know, you got 3 other racetracks here, and you've got a very strong circuit. It's very unique. I love coming down here. I miss being able to come down here the last 2 years. So really good. And then the racing, I mean, you could not have had a better start to finish 13 race card as you had here yesterday with the maiden races, the allowances, and then the 6 stakes, turf and dirt. It really was, you know, you had some bombs come in. It was really a fun day.
Yeah, the undercard was really good too. I mean, there was one race with a sibling to Yalpon, Matoli, Hot Rod Charlie. Yeah, I'm glad you tossed in Pole Boys there. My visit to Fairgrounds, I agree, love the track, and I made the visit a few years back, and I was planning one day, and I liked it so much I hung for a couple of days, but I went for the Pole Boys. You didn't mention the beignets. The beignets and the chocolate milk, that was one of my thumbs up, but...
That's cafe au lait. It's not chocolate milk.
I had chocolate milk. I do not drink coffee, so I had chocolate. I went for chocolate milk.
You went for the cocoa. All right. We're going to start calling you. You're like the quick Nestle Quick Bunny. That's.
But I give it a thumbs up. If people go down there, they can try that as well. All right, let's jump into the races, and we'll kind of work our way back from the Risen Star. We're going to take a look at the, I think I called for the stretch run. If the guys can pull it out of the gate, it may be worth watching the whole way, because it was kind of one going into the first turn when Epicenter got out there and kind of set some easy fractions. Epicenter is going to be the winner, number 5, but Smile Happy and the 3-year-old debut, number 8, runs second. Zandin, after running so well last year to end the season in the Remsen, runs 3rd in here. Pioneer of Medina, I thought, was really interesting and gets up to run 4th and complete the superfecta at 33-1. So as you say, it was a, a nice capper to a really, really nice day. But give us some of your thoughts on the Risen Star.
Well, it's funny. Going into this, from a handicapping standpoint, I think the residual memory of the LeCompte was playing a little too heavy a factor. And because that was such a collapse scenario, I think the thought process was a little too, I mean, personally, I ended up sort of gravitating toward Epicenter the more I looked at the race, because there was just not as much speed and there was not as much pace pressure as we saw in the LeCompte. And this is a racetrack that it's very rare that a horse will wire, or take that back, that a horse will come from far back. Speed does very well here traditionally. And so the more you looked at this, the more it made sense that Epicenter did have a chance to control the race up front. And he looked so great all week coming into it. And then, frankly, in the paddock, he looked spectacular as well. So it became a question of who is going to go with him. And the more you looked at it, you really realized there were only a couple of horses that, for different reasons, might be near the lead. So it made a lot of sense that Epicenter could get this kind of trip. And then he absolutely was up to the task. 98 buyer, and this is a big win. Ron Winchell, of course. Steve Asmussen looking for his first Derby. Joel Rosario kind of cruised late. You saw him take a peek. There's a lot to like going forward here. Louisiana Derby certainly next, and the way he ran, the stretch out from a mile and an eighth to a mile and 3/16 shouldn't be any issue. He appears to be a very serious player as we go forward. The other major horses behind, Smile Happy in his seasonal debut. I'm sure McPeak was a little disappointed, and the Lucky Seven people, but he ran okay. And
McPeak on yesterday, and it sounded like this was a means to an end. He was saying, if I'm second or third, I'll be happy with that.
They always say that you want to win every opportunity. And he came in unbeaten. And the fact, don't forget that this Kentucky Jockey Club, has been so crazily productive. You've had three horses come back and win out of that race and win stakes, including Close to Midnight, the LeCompte winner, who's waiting for the Louisiana Derby. So we'll see what McPeak does next. But that was okay. Zandon was okay as well. Coming back off the layoff and going a mile and an eighth again. He should move forward and get tighter out of that. I'm sure Chad's not unhappy with it. There you go. I guess the disappointment in here a little bit was Trafalgar. I suppose you could term a bit of a disappointment. And Papacap, too. Papacap, yeah. It doesn't appear at this point like he's gone forward at all, off of all the good promise he showed it too. So you did get, the three top players. They were the three, principal horses coming in, and they're the three principal horses coming out.
All right, let's go to the Rachel Alexandra. Unfortunately, LaCrete got pulled up on the backstretch, but as far as checking Twitter last night, the connections were saying she came out of it, will need some kind of surgery, came out with a fracture, and maybe have a pin put in. That's what I read last night. But LaCrete got pulled up on the backstretch, the sibling to Clairiere. But it'll be Turner Loose, the number 7, winning. Goddess of Fire for Todd Pletcher comes to town and runs second, the number 8, Awake at Midnight. Runs third, and Hidden Connection, the number 11 at 2-1, winds up running fourth in here after the solid 2-year-old season last year, early on winning the Pocahontas. Your thoughts on the Rachel Alexandra?
Well, this race looked like it was going to be a grab bag, and it proved out to be. One of the things that I thought was interesting. You had what, four horses that had, turfy backgrounds, including Turner Loose. So you had to make some assessments about, you know, moving to the main track from the turf. And this horse was the one, you know, among those, among that group, this was the horse that obviously made the transition best. And, you know, this has traditionally been the Oaks Trail, the Louisiana, the Fairgrounds Oaks Trail, has traditionally been super productive going toward Kentucky. This feels like a little bit of a mundane group. We'll have to take a wait and see, I think, coming out of this. It doesn't feel like this is going to be as productive a set. I tried to go, I think, what, eight deep, and didn't even have Turner Loose among the eight. I mean, that's the kind of race it felt like going in, and that's what it was coming out. We're going to have to take a wait and see. Let's see these horses run back. I'm not sure what we got out of this. And of course, Lecrette's injury as well. I mean, she was going to have to improve any way to compete. Hidden Connection had been sort of a negative buzz around her. I was shocked that she ended up going favored. This was a messy bunch. The horse that really disappointed was the
Dream Lift. The Robert Dino Diodoro horse, Dream Lift, was the disappointment.
No, not her. Divine Huntress. Divine Huntress. The Grand Motion Eclipse Filly really had a look to her coming in. Yeah, Dream Lift, I kind of used defensively, didn't know what to expect. This race is a mess. Yeah. I'll be honest. I've got very little. I think there's very little to be convinced about from this group coming out of this race, to be honest.
I think you're absolutely right, because the winner is a horse that had started four times all on the turf, and the buyers weren't jumping off the page by any means. So I'm completely in agreement. I think most people will be that wait and see on some of these horses coming out. All right, a little bit earlier, it was the Fairgrounds on the turf. Some people on Twitter commented after the race, and I would have to agree, 12-1 morning line Cavalry Charge goes off at 35-1 on a nice day for Dallas Stewart. Dallas Stewart, West Point Thoroughbreds and Company, Cavalry Charge. Nice ride by Brian Hernandez to get that one to kind of scoot up inside. At Hamo runs second as the number six, number seven, Halo again third. Santon, who went eventually went off as the favorite and had a little buzz going into the race on Twitter. At 5-2, Santon, number three, runs third. It was kind of a close-up ding-dong finish here, but again, a nice ride, nice clever ride from Brian Hernandez to kind of hold on here at the wire. Your thoughts on the Fairgrounds?
Well, all the turf, obviously, depending on how many of them we go through, all the turf races produced, other than Continental Coins, all the turf races produced big prices and had surprises. Brian Hernandez Jr. is, we talked about this Friday with Frank McGoey. Brian Hernandez Jr. is just terrific at positional race riding. He invariably, if he has horse, he invariably will keep them in a position to be successful. And that's, you know, that's all you could ask. Coming off the performance in the Colonel Bradley, this actually was not impossible to project from Cavalry Charge that he could be competitive. The issue here ended up becoming that as you watch that race, and maybe when we watch the Al Stahl Memorial, the turf course was very fast. And you see dust, being kicked up. That was a very fast turf course yesterday. And basically the exact opposite of what we had on LeCompte Day, where they had, you may have noticed the temporary rail was up. So the two inner paths were being protected. because on Le Comp Day, it had been soft down there, and horses were getting mired if they traveled close to the rail. So they left the temporary rails up for a big day, which was a little surprising. And I don't think they needed to do that. The inside would have been okay. But as it happens, by keeping the temporary rails up, the horses that were, you know, outposted, like Two Emmys and Largent, for instance, you know, they had extra work to do. They're losing more ground and so forth. Santin and Adamo, they just had too much to do late. And meanwhile, Cavalry Charge is in position to win. So it actually salvaged what was a very frustrating day for West Point. They had their $1.5 million Vinco earlier in the day really underperform and misfire. So it was kind of a roller coaster ride for Terry Finley. Was there with a number of partners, and they were all smiles after this Cavalry Charge performance to kind of salvage the day for them.
Yeah, as I say, it was a nice day. I'm just trying to pull up here for Dallas Stewart, though. Where are we here?
He had the maiden of Mr. Fipke's earlier on the card.
I was looking for the name. Tale of Reddy Chianti, who won earlier on the card. So nice day for Dallas down there. All right, let's go a little bit earlier. And the Mineshaft Olympiad in here obviously was going to attract a lot of attention off of the triple-digit buyer last time, which maybe validated and said he was getting back closer to participating in that freakish race we saw up at Saratoga that Baby Yoda won with the big triple-digit buyer. Well, running second that day, Olympiad had run triple-digit buyer as well. Hadn't lived up to that until the last start down at Gulfstream, where he ran the 101, got back up into that triple-digit rarefied air, so seemed to be coming into this in good form. Silver Prospector is a horse I've liked throughout the career. I had him down in the mix a little bit, though. I had Miles D in between those two, and it winds up those three getting it done. Olympiad kind of validating what we saw last time with the number, winning by over two lengths at 8-5. 9-1, though, pretty good price on Silver Prospector. Completes a $26 and change exact on Miles D, third in here. Your thoughts on the win by Olympiad?
Well, Olympiad and all of the four-year-olds that were in this race are really pretty exciting coming forward. You know, Miles D as well, Obisos, Happy American. This was a nice race. I mean, Olympiad, it's a coming out party, obviously. And this was sort of anticipated. A lot of people, I think, saw him as the day's most likely winner, and he comes through in that regard. And, you know, there's not a lot else to say. It'd be interesting to see what kind of decisions are made from the top finishers about, you know, where they go from here, including Miles D. Silver Prospector absolutely was the right price. I think a lot of people keyed off of him. We talked about that Friday with Frank McGoey. Obesos, I thought, ran fine as well to be fourth. So the most promising part of this is how many four-year-olds were either making their second start already of their four-year-old campaign. But the handicap division is a big beneficiary of this race. And once those horses come back from the disgusting races in the Middle East, we're going to have a very good second half of the year with all the handicap horses. Olympiad did what he was supposed to do.
Yeah, last year's three-year-old class, as we've seen some of them come back at four-year-olds, are setting
really good
up for a promising season. And worth noting, and I will tout you, because typically, as you do on Sundays, put up the buyer figures, 102 buyer. So it was a solid performance yesterday. A little bit earlier, you mentioned it as well, the Stahl Memorial, mile and a 16th on the grass. And it's going to be She Can't Sing at a generous 24-1 getting it done. Past the Plate, the number one, runs second as the 5-2 favorite. And Abscond, I liked Abscond in here, 7-2, winds up running third. But as you noted earlier, yet another upset on the turf with She Can't Sing getting it done at $51.
This was some shocker. And what you had to believe here was that stretching out to the mile and a 16th, that was going to be a formula for success for She Can't Sing. Here's Chris Block, Bob Lothenbach, and got to be happy for everybody involved here. Jareth Loveberry, who was is a very underrated. There's all kinds of underrated jockeys were on display yesterday. Brian Hernandez Jr., Jareth Loveberry, also Ray Lou Gutierrez, got a nice win on the card. Even Declan Carroll, Davey Carroll's son, the upset that he authored for Al Stahl in the Colonel Power, beating Just Might, Michelle Lovell's front runner. But She Can't Sing has been best going short. And it's funny, I had a notion to use a stretch out type in here. That was Dawn's Dancer, the horse of Chris Davis's that came in from Florida. I thought, here you want somebody maybe that's going to be versatile and rateable, that has tactical speed. And it ended up being not a bad idea, but She Can't Sing was the one that was able to utilize that kind of tactical speed and the terrific ride by Loveberry. Big win. And good job by Chris Block, who is a longtime Illinois staple, and Block does a terrific job. Here's a five-year-old mare getting her first stake win, and this is a horse being by Bernardini. She'll certainly go into the Lothenbach broodmare band. So this is a big win for her and for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice win. And we've kind of talked about it, and I wanted to show the Colonel Power because it was a great race for me. I was in here handicapping during the afternoon. I couldn't get past Just Might, who I think is just a fabulous story down there this season. Turf, dirt, just phenomenal. And I thought Just Might was going to get it done. But I had that one over Pyron. I had them 1-2. They flip-flop. I was shocked. Pyron goes off at 19-1. And with my top two flip-flopped, you wind up with a $98, $96 exacta in here. But it is Just Might as we pick it up in the stretch, looking like he was going to continue the win streak. Well, the first under the wire streak, but eventually isn't able to hold off the late run from Pyron, getting it done, as you say, for Al Stahl and Declan Carroll on board. Your thoughts on the Colonel Power?
Well, it's a great win for Declan, who has really struggled this meet. And I think three wins coming in on the day. So it really lifted his spirits. Happy for him, a kid who I've kind of watched grow up from the backstretch of Churchill with his dad, Davey, and his mom, Kim. And of course, it's a family operation. Aislinn, the sister, she works for Phil Dutton, the Olympian in Pennsylvania. So it's about as horsey a family as you could have. I had lunch with Michelle Lovell on Thursday, and Michelle specifically, the one horse that she was worried about was Pyron. Specifically, when we talked about the race, she said, "Pyron scares me." And she thought that if Just Might was going to get beat, it was Pyron. And she was right. And I no excuse for Just Might in here. And so, after the disappointment of the disqualification, yeah, which was very silly, that DQ was really did not have to come down. I mean, understand why he was DQ'd, but he really didn't have to come down anyway. So Just Might is going to have to regroup. Michelle, still having a great meet. She's also got change of command. So they'll get another chance in 4 weeks at another turf sprint.
And I just wanted to touch on one more race because I know you're friends with the connections here a little bit and tweeted out about it. I will also tout, were those actual race photos? Like you had the one horse with all four legs off. Were you taking those with your phone?
Yeah.
Those were crazy good pictures.
I'm not exactly sure if I don't think there's any unique setting. I appreciate you saying that. I was so astounded by the pictures. There was the picture of strong quality for Mark Cassie and Gary Barber, and also Kinsman is on there. I actually ended up in the photograph, in the win photo there. I got to pick that up today. I got four off the ground for him for strong quality. 76 buyer for him. Got a fabulous picture of that terrific shoulder-to-shoulder battle between Marsalis and Momentus. And for people, if you haven't seen this, this race was the horse. Marsalis was the firster that Steve Asmussen said was going to run sub 110. He did, except he still got beat. Unbelievable. 110 and 3, or 109 and 3, I should say. Momentus for Windstar and Sienna and Bon Chance Farm. There you go. Look at that. How about that picture? I was oh, my God. I saw it on the phone. I was like, I've got to tweet this out.
When I was looking at your Twitter, and I'm going down looking at the in-race pictures, I'm thinking, this is crazy. Did he take this with his phone? They're very good. I'm going to give you a thumbs up there. But I wanted to mention, and I don't know whether the guys can quickly pull up the replay of the stretch, if you can, the 8th at Fairgrounds yesterday, because, again, it was a great undercard. I liked Cyberknife in the LeCompte, but coming out of the maiden, maybe that was a little salty. Gets back to a more proper non-winner, so won yesterday, and Cyberknife got it done on the undercard. And I just wanted to, as I say, mention that as you know the connections.
Well, that's Al Gold, and it's a big win for Al, and it's nice for him to have this kind of horse. I'm sure that they'll move right to the Louisiana Derby. We'll find out Brad Cox's thoughts, but Cyberknife, this was a smart move to back up from the LeCompte, go into this allowance, and this was a good group that he beat. 87 buyer.
I'm looking at it right here. You got it right, 87.
Yeah, so he's going to have to take another step forward in the Louisiana Derby. But that was a nice win, that maiden we just mentioned, Momentus, and strong quality too. 82 or something a buyer. And there was that filly of on Friday. You had two important filly performances. You had Bomb Diggity going short. That was a nice effort out of the Asmussen camp, and you had. Berna Breezy win that allowance. Berna Breezy had been third in the prep for the Rachel, and Matt Shearer decided to go the conservative route, bypass the Rachel, and Berna Breezy won well on Friday. 80 something buyer for her too, so she'll probably turn up in the Fairgrounds Oaks as well. So the whole road to the 3-year-old title here for the season has really been good, and I think the Oaks fillies have to take another step forward, but the Derby group looks excellent. So a month from now, 4 weeks from now, you'll have another big afternoon. They'll have to go a little bit to be as good a day as it was here yesterday.
Really was a fabulous card. We were looking at it all afternoon as well and previewed it yesterday. Steve, we'll let you go. You got to wrap up, but before we let you go, when you're coming back, are you going to do recaps from New Orleans over the next couple of days? When you headed back, are you going to take advantage of some Mardi Gras activities?
Well, we're going to, we've been having trouble. Casey's in the hospital. And so we've had some production issues all week. And he's still in the hospital as of this morning. And so I'm up in the air getting started. But I'm heading to Hot Springs after tomorrow. And I'll be in Hot Springs for almost 2 weeks. There's the Rebel coming up this week. And then I've got to stay in Hot Springs for the HBPA convention afterward, and then I'll go to Fort Lauderdale on Fountain of Youth morning. I'll be able to see the Fountain of Youth, and then we'll go to Tampa and get a couple of days of Tampa Bay Derby lead up, and then we'll close out this month-long trip with 3 days at OBS, the OBS March sale after Tampa.
I'm envious. I like that. The Southern swing all the way down and wind up in Tampa, which it's been
that's
too
your
long.
Favorite.
Yeah, it's been too long since I've been there.
I know. That's not well. They had, you know what? It was so long that they had to close Derby Lane.
That's That's right. He hasn't been here in all that. Yeah, you're exactly. I hadn't.
No reason to stay over.
I like that take on it. Steve, appreciate it. Have a great rest of the visit in New Orleans and beyond, and we'll check in again.
Very good. If you maybe talk to you from Hot Springs next week.
Sounds good. All right. Steve Bick, again, SiriusXM's At the Races and More. He was down in New Orleans all week long, and so I thought we'd catch up with him not only to get a little racing action, but we got a little food action as well. No better person to check in with if you're headed somewhere on the racing map to find out where all the best food places are in that area. He's been to them all. All right, we're going to wrap it up. Once again, do want to remind you that there's the carryover today out at Santa Anita. $592,000 up for grabs. With that kind of money and a mandatory pay, that will balloon up significantly. So that's today at Santa Anita. Mandatory pay in the Rainbow Six. Keep that in mind. Also want to thank our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship. Always appreciate their support during the championship meet. I'm going to wrap it up, but as usual, we'll be back in an hour and a half or so with OTB Live. For a Sunday afternoon, I'm going to take a look at some Oaklawn and some Aqueduct, and we'll throw some other action in there as well, and there will be more here on the network also. Always a lot of fun. So far, I have to sit down and kind of add it up, but going back to last weekend, the one sheet did very well. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we were still doing okay. Yesterday was a pretty good day. And as I say, I got to add it up. But the one sheet's been out. Maybe I'm ringing the death knell for today. But hopefully if you watch today, maybe you can get some decent opinions as well. We will certainly be trying all afternoon long. So we're going to wrap it up for this Sunday morning edition of Racing Across America. As always, we appreciate your tuning in. I'm Seth Merrill. I will be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.